Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 274, titled, If Music Be the Food of Love, Munch On, Part 2. This is one of a number of programs in an ongoing series about German corporate control of the American media. This, obviously, as the title indicates, deals with music. This is being recorded on February 4th of the year 2001. The title is referential. It refers to a Nazi tract, Serpent's Walk. That's authored by one Randolph D. Calverhall, C-A-L-V-E-R-H-A-L-L. That is a nom de plume. This book is published by National Vanguard Books, copyright 1991. That is the publishing arm of the National Alliance, arguably the most important of the domestic Nazi groups. This book is published by the same publisher that publishes the Turner Diaries. That was the role model for not only the Nazi terror group, the Order, financed by German, quote, families, unquote, in Latin America, but also for Timothy McVeigh and Company in the Oklahoma City bombing. Just as the Turner Diaries appears to be a manifesto, a blueprint for what Nazi elements are attempting to do, so too, I believe, is Serpent's Walk. The book is about a Nazi takeover in the mid-21st century by the descendants of the SS who go underground, build up their economic muscle, buy into the American opinion-forming media, and take over the United States. And in describing the takeover of the American opinion-forming media, two of the Nazi faithful in this book, Serpent's Walk, again, which I believe is far more than the novel it purports to be, describe this takeover as follows. And this is an excerpt that veteran listeners have heard many times before. Speaking of the SS as gaining control of the American media, Wrench, one of the Nazi faithful, describes the following in speaking with Lessing, another of the converts. About 10 years ago, we swung a merger, a takeover, and got voting control of a super corporation that runs a small but significant chunk of the American media. Not openly, not with bands and trumpets or swastikas flying, but quietly. One huge corporation cuddling up to another one and gently munching it up like a great gubbing amoeba. That's the reference to munching. And then Wrench goes on. Since then, we've been replacing executives, pushing somebody out here, bringing somebody else in there. We've swung program content around, too. Not much, but a little so it won't show. We've cut down on nasty Nazi movies, good guys in white hats and bad guys in black SS hats, lovable Jews versus fiendish Germans, and we have media psychologists, ad agencies, and behavior modification specialists working on image changes. And again, the munching up here is the reference, and obviously that's also a quote from Shakespeare. One of the major companies that we've been talking about in connection with German corporate control over the American media is the Bertelsmann firm. That is the third largest media conglomerate in the world. It has very strong and demonstrable Nazi heritage and appears from the analysis of the company to be a Bormann company, that is to say a company belonging to the Bormann Flight Capital Organization, the economic and political component of a Third Reich gone underground, and a Third Reich that in fact perpetuated itself in a very deadly effective and generations-long mafia-like fashion. As crazy as that'll appear to uninitiated listeners, there's ample documentation of that. Contact Spitfire, time permitting, I will give you the address, etc., for that, and you can get a hold of tapes and access the website with information which will document that. Also, sister station WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey, is now archiving some of the For the Record segments on Real Audio so that listeners can listen to those online, and time permitting, I'll have information about that at the end of the program as well. In addition to controlling American trade publishing, in addition to being the dominant element in English language publishing, along with another Nazi-linked firm, the von Holtzbrinck firm, Bertelsmann is one of the largest music companies in the world, the second largest recording company, and fourth or fifth in sales, and they are moving up in that world and are negotiating to buy EMI, or to merge, quote-unquote, with EMI, although Bertelsmann would have the dominant element in that merger, and or would be the dominant element, and as we've discussed, in For the Record programs 261 and 263, Bertelsmann acquired Napster, the largest online community with some 37 or 38 million users. Napster uses the peer-to-peer technology, which in and of itself is one of the most valuable aspects of the Bertelsmann deal with Napster. That has applications far beyond music and is envisioned as being very, very influential in the high-tech marketplace or office of the future. Napster is also obviously a music-sharing platform, a file-sharing platform, and in that context, consider the following. Research credit on this goes to a member of the listening audience who got this from CNN.com/2000/tech. Tech is all in capitals. This obviously is the website for CNN, and this was is an IDG credit by Rick Pereira, P-E-R-E-R-A. It's dated December 20th of the year 2000 and headlined, Bertelsmann addresses Napster Nazi charges. This reads in part as follows. Just weeks after forming an alliance with Napster, German media giant Bertelsmann found itself answering charges from German law enforcement authorities that the online music exchange enables the spread of right-wing extremist music. Skipping down. The statement came in response to charges leveled by the Verfassungsschutz, the Constitutional Protection Office in the state of Lower Saxony. The office is responsible for enforcing Germany's laws against incitement to racial hatred, under which much neo-Nazi music is banned. Quote, Napster offers today the platform for neo-Nazi music worldwide, unquote, said Verfassungsschutz spokesman Rüdiger Hesse, that's H-E-S-S-E, again quoting, I can easily download any title that's on the index of banned music to my hard drive and burn compact discs of it, unquote. He added that previously, neo-Nazi music was exchanged under the table, unquote, in the form of illegally sold CDs. Quote, the biggest problem now is that everyone can access it, unquote, he said, to which Dave Emery would say, surprise, surprise. That should not be all that surprising, and one of the questions that suggests itself is whether perhaps, if in fact the information about Bertelsmann's Nazi heritage and inclinations is accurate, and there's every indication that it is, whether that was part of the intent. I've noted in For the Record programs 211 and 222 the influence of Nazi music on the youth subculture, among them the Nazi black metal subgenre. And again, programs 211 and 222 are available from Spitfire. I would also note that the conspiracy milieu has no shortage of fascist penetration, both conspiracy publishing and periodical distribution is also showing distinct fascist influence, as are many other subcultures, including the New Age. I don't want to be misunderstood as suggesting that these subcultures are in and of themselves fascist, but they prove themselves to be very susceptible to fascist penetration. Now, in discussion of the Bormann Fly Capital Organization, and the available evidence suggests very strongly that Bertelsmann is in fact a Bormann/Third Reich company, I've discussed the fact that the major German corporations, unlike American corporations, function as the vehicles for an international and national, international German hegemony. Basically, they function as vehicles of national interest, whereas American corporations coordinate from a political standpoint with regard to marketing, taxation, labor, and environmental concerns. They are in and of themselves, past that point, relatively apolitical and are just as willing to sell out to a foreign bidder to do anything else. They do not function as coordinated elements of a national strategy the way German corporations do. The German corporations function like the divisions of a conquering army, and that is fundamentally different. And the director of that army is the remarkable and deadly Bormann organization about which I've spoken so many times in the past. We're going to turn next to the Wall Street Journal of Wednesday, January 3rd of the year 2001. This is an article by William Boston, a Wall Street Journal staff reporter, and it concerns the first major music company to join with Bertelsmann in its Napster deal. And, surprise, surprise, that is a German company, Edel Music, about which we've spoken before, specifically in the first section of If Music Be the Food of Love, Munch On. That was recorded last summer. Last summer being the summer of 2000. This article, by again a Wall Street Journal article from January 3rd of the year 2001, and authored by William Boston, is headlined, Edel Music Reaches Accord with Napster to Provide Songs for Fee-Based Service, and it reads in part as follows. Edel Music, that's capital E-D-E-L, Edel Music AG, the European independent music label, has agreed to distribute music over Napster Incorporated's popular web-based song swapping service. The biggest deal since Napster agreed to create a legal version of its service with Bertelsmann AG. Under the terms of the deal, which is effective immediately, Napster will make songs by Edel artists such as Craig David and Two Step available to those of its 50 million registered users who sign up as members of its new fee-based song swapping service. And in addition to the fact that Edel Music, a major independent German company, has become the first major company to hook up with the Napster-Bertelsmann alliance, we should note that Bertelsmann is continuing to fold some of its previous online music corporate entities into the Bertelsmann-Napster operation. This is from the Los Angeles Times of Friday, January 12th of the year 2001. It's an article by P.J. Huffstutter, H-U-F-F-S-T-U-T-T-E-R, an L.A. Times writer. It's headlined, Napster software includes CD Now link, and it reads in part as follows. By the way, there was assistance from Reuters in compiling this story. Napster Incorporated released a new version of its software Thursday that includes an e-commerce link to Bertelsmann-backed CD Now, marking the first example of how the alliance between the media giant and the controversial music swapping firm will make money. The link to CD Now will be prominently placed on top of the Napster application and connect users to a web page where they can search the online retailer's collection of more than 500,000 albums, movies, and other entertainment products. So do note that. I would note that Napster is planning, Bertelsmann, rather, is planning an early Napster relaunch. In fact, that is the headline of an article that appeared in the Financial Times of Tuesday, January 30th of the year 2001. This deals with the launch of the new fee-based Napster-Bertelsmann alliance. This again from the Financial Times of 1/30/2001. This is an article by James Harding in Davos, that's in Switzerland. It's headlined, Bertelsmann plans early Napster relaunch, subheaded music. Middlehoff surprises with prediction of summer start for legitimate subscription service. It reads in part as follows. Bertelsmann, the German media group, said yesterday it planned to launch Napster, the online song swapping service, as a legitimate subscription business as early as this summer. Thomas Middlehoff, the Bertelsmann chief executive who shocked the music world last year by buying into the renegade Napster business, yesterday offered another small surprise by saying he expected to start charging users within 6 months. This apparently came as something of a surprise to Napster, who I suspect, like many countries in Europe in the 1930s and 40s, found that doing business or forming, quote, alliances, unquote, with their German compatriots proved to be full of surprises, and they eventually found that their allies turned out to be running the show. This is from the San Francisco Chronicle of that same day, that day being January 30th of the year 2001. This is an article by Benny Evangelista. By the way, interestingly enough, this news appeared on the anniversary of Hitler's assumption of power, which was on January 30th. And Napster may be finding out some of what not only the German people, but many other peoples in Europe found out about doing business with the Third Reich. And in fact, the evidence suggests that Bertelsmann may very well be a Bormann company. This is an article by Benny Evangelista, a Chronicle staff writer. It's headlined, Exec Says Napster to Charge Fee, subtitled, Remarks Catch Redwood City Firm Off Guard. And skipping down, we read, Napster officials, who were caught off guard by Middlehoff's comments, issued a short written statement saying there was no timetable for launching a fee-based version of the online music sharing program. And so Napster officials were caught off guard by this. And again, if in fact the circumstantial evidence very strongly suggesting that Bertelsmann is a Bormann firm is accurate, and obviously I believe that is, Napster is in for a lot more surprises. And if in fact they decide to resist the will of their German masters, some of the executives with Napster may be in for a very, very, very big and permanent surprise indeed. In fact, there may be some unexpected departures from the leadership ranks of Napster. As Bertelsmann has prepared to become number one in music, as well as dominating American publishing, bear in mind the Serpent's Walk scenario, there have been some unexpected departures, some of them resignations and some of them more permanent departures than that. One of the more permanent departures was the departure of Rudy Gassner, who was scheduled to become chief executive of BMG, Bertelsmann's music division. However, it turns out that that was not to be the case. The following is from the Wall Street Journal of Tuesday, December 26th of the year 2000. This is an article by Martin Piers, PWRS, of the Wall Street Journal. It's headlined, Death to Force Restructuring of BMG Ranks. And one of the things I wonder about the death of Rudy Gassner at the age of 58, was it a natural death? And certainly people do die of heart attacks at the age of 58. Or was this perhaps a strategic decision made by the leadership of the remarkable and, again, deadly Bormann organization that for one reason or another, Mr. Gassner did not fit in? What that reason might be, I do not know. And I do not know whether there's anything more to Mr. Gassner's death than simply an untimely and tragic happenstance. But when you're dealing with the Bormann organization, happenstance is very seldom the case, and death is very often the case for those who get in their way. Turning to this article from the Wall Street Journal of 12/26/2000, the Martin Piers article reads in part as follows about the death of Rudy Gassner. Bertelsmann AG said it will announce a, quote, new leadership structure, unquote, for its BMG Entertainment Music Unit at the start of the new year, following the death Saturday of Rudy Gassner, G-A-S-S-N-E-R, who was scheduled to become chief executive of BMG January 1st. The death of Mr. Gassner, 58 years old, comes as Bertelsmann chairman Thomas Mittelhoff is in the middle of negotiating a merger of BMG with EMI Group PLC London. Those talks will likely affect the leadership structure Mr. Mittelhoff puts in place. A spokeswoman for the German media company declined to comment further. Mr. Gassner died of a heart attack near his vacation home in Sommerberg, Germany. A native of Germany and a music industry veteran, he had lived in the U.S. for the past 13 years after joining BMG as head of international operations in 1987. So this was Tuesday the 26th. Gassner died on the 24th. That was exactly 1 week before, or 1 week and 1 day before he was to become the head of BMG. And as we shall see, just as the book Serpent's Walk discusses executives being pushed out here and replaced there, there have been a lot of executives leaving for one reason or another as Bertelsmann positions itself to become number one in music as well as dominating American publishing. I would add that they do not control, they will not control music completely, but they are moving up. And I would note that Thomas Mittelhoff is on the board of directors of Vivendi, which now owns Universal, formerly a division of Seagram's, and that is number one in music, and that will give Bertelsmann, chairman, CEO Thomas Mittelhoff, a big say in the operations of Vivendi as well as, obviously, Bertelsmann. More about the leadership change at BMG forced by the untimely death of Rudy Gassner. This from the LA Times of Thursday, January 4th of the year 2001. This is an article by Chuck Phillips of the LA Times. It's headlined, Bertelsmann expected to name a ex-TV exec to lead music group. And this is about the appointment of Rolf Schmidholz to head BMG. And we're going to take a look at some of the background of Mr. Schmidholz in a minute. But note the significance of his coming to power at this time, and bear in mind that the death of Rudy Gassner a week before he was to come to power necessitated this. Bertelsmann has decided to appoint a former television executive to run its music division after the sudden death of Rudy Gassner, industry sources said. Mr. Gassner, who apparently died of a heart attack just days before he was slated to take the reins at Bertelsmann Music Group, will be replaced by Rolf Schmidholz, the 52-year-old former television head and chief creative officer at the German media conglomerate, industry sources said. The promotion of Schmidholz comes at the same time Bertelsmann is pushing to close a proposed merger with EMI Group to create by far the world's biggest music conglomerate. Bertelsmann is counting on teaming Schmidholz, an experienced business manager based in Hamburg, with Ken Berry, a record industry veteran who has been running EMI's music division for nearly 5 years. Under Bertelsmann's plan, the two executives would run the combined operation as partners, with Schmidholz handling, turning to the inside, the business dealings and Berry calling the creative shots, people familiar with the negotiations said. Bertelsmann declined to comment. The German conglomerate will wait until Friday to announce Schmidholz's appointment out of respect for Mr. Gassner, who is scheduled to be buried today in Greenwich, Connecticut. The appointment made before the earth had even been heaped on top of the late unfortunate Mr. Gassner. Note that this promotion comes at the same time as Bertelsmann is pushing to close the merger with EMI. Although it is billed as a merger, in fact, Bertelsmann will be the dominant element. More about Mr. Schmidholz and his background. This is from the Wall Street Journal of Friday, January 5th of the year 2001. This is an article by William Boston and Martin Piers of the Wall Street Journal, and it's headlined, Bertelsmann to name company insider without music experience as BMG chief. Skipping down, we read, Thomas Middelhoff, Bertelsmann chairman and chief executive, is making the appointment largely on the assumption that the EMI deal will be successfully concluded, said a person familiar with the situation. And this, again, the appointment of Rolf Schmidholz alluded to in the L.A. Times article that we just read, that L.A. Times article from Thursday, January 4th. This is from the Wall Street Journal of the following day, January 5th of 2001. Continuing, but even speaking of the Bertelsmann EMI deal, but even if the transaction doesn't happen, Mr. Middelhoff believes a music industry outsider is better equipped to deal with issues such as the impact of the Internet on the industry, said a person familiar with the situation. And skipping down, a previous merger agreement between EMI and Time Warner Incorporated's Warner Music was scuttled over antitrust concerns last year. By the way, that was largely by the European Union. More about that later. And any transaction between BMG and EMI will face close regulatory scrutiny. And keep that in mind for later on in the program. We're going to talk about that more in the second half of the broadcast. Speaking of Mr. Schmidholz, Mr. Schmidholz began his career in the early 1980s as journalist with public television group Westdeutscher Rundfunk. As an anchorman for Germany's main public TV channel, ARD, he made a name for himself covering the Chernobyl disaster in 1986. He later became publisher and editor of the weekly magazine Stern, which is published by Bertelsmann unit Gruner & Jahr. In 1994, he was recruited to run Bertelsmann's European film and TV business. Last year, Mr. Middelhoff appointed him to the management board with the job of integrating content strategies across Bertelsmann's business divisions. And, skipping down, note that he became publisher and editor of Stern. More about that in a couple of minutes. If the merger is completed, Mr. Schmidholz's business experience would complement the music experience of Ken Berry, who currently heads EMI Recorded Music. Mr. Schmidholz has experience in dealing with mergers. As the head of Bertelsmann's television business a few years ago, Mr. Schmidholz oversaw the merger of Bertelsmann's UFA film and Fernseh GmbH with C. Luxembourgeoise de Télédiffusion to create European broadcasting powerhouse CLT UFA. That ultimately merged with a Pearson company, as we looked at in an earlier installment of this series about German corporate control over American media. And the Pearson Bertelsmann firm was predicated on the Luxembourg-based holding company. Luxembourg-based holding company is one of the major elements in the remarkable Bormann Flight Capital Group. That television company was envisioned as being prepared to move into the American market pending the deregulation of American telecommunications. It'll be interesting to see if the Bush administration and Michael Powell, Colin Powell's son and the head of the FCC, go ahead with that deregulation. Now, note that Mr. Rolf Schmidholz was the head of Stern magazine. That's a Bertelsmann magazine property. We're going to review a section from an earlier broadcast about German corporate control over American media, and we're going to take a look at the use of the Hitler Diaries scandal, which helped to fund contemporary Nazi elements, and which also served as the pretext for driving the leadership, or the editorial staff, I should say, of Stern to the right. And we're going to see a very brief but very significant reference to Mr. Rolf Schmidholz. We're going to turn once again to the book Global Dreams, subtitled Imperial Corporations in the New World Order. This book was co-authored by Richard J. Barnett and John Cavanaugh. It was published in hardcover by Simon & Schuster. Copyright 1994, the ISBN number 0-671-63377 1942-5. And of the use of, by the way, this is by way of review, of the use of the Hitler diaries and also the reactionary sentiments of Reinhard Mohn, the head of Bertelsmann at the time, to drive Stern magazine to the right. And note here, and gain control over Stern, note here the role of Rolf Schmidholz. He will be touched on at the end. Speaking of Reinhard Mohn, he personally stopped the publication of Rolf Hochhuth's The Deputy, a devastating attack on Pope Pius XII for collaborating with Hitler after it had been set in type. In 1976, the acting editor of Stern, Manfred Bissinger, already considered too far left by Bertelsmann management, published an article about Germany's leading tax evaders and capital exporters, a list that included Mohn himself. But he lacked the evidence to pin down his charges, and to the astonishment of no one but himself, was fired. According to a former Stern editor, Mark Wosner, Bertelsmann's CEO, by the way, that was in 1994, Bertelsmann's CEO now insists on being told in advance what will be in the magazine each week. Nine editors have been dismissed since the Hitler fiasco. Michael Jurgs, the ninth to fall, believes that his skepticism about reunification was the reason why Schulte-Hillen, that's Gerd Schulte-Hillen, handed him a 3 million mark golden parachute exactly 4 weeks after being signed to a new 4-year contract. Note the editors being pushed out here. By the way, I would note that the German end of reunification was handled by Günter Strassmayr, the father of Andreas Strassmayr, allegedly the mastermind of the Oklahoma City bombing. The American end of German reunification negotiations was handled by Robert Zoellick, the new U.S. Trade Commissioner appointed by George W. Bush. And by the way, the economic reunification of Germany was handled by the fellow who is currently the head of the IMF. His name escapes me just off the top of my head. It'll probably come to me before the second half of the program, but he is now the head of the International Monetary Fund. We took a look at that, and for the records, 200 and 215. More about the driving to the right of Stern magazine. Mohn and his top managers in Gütersloh decided to discipline the magazine for the Hitler scandal by forcing a man of pronounced conservative views on the demoralized staff. The publisher of Capital, Johannes Gross, and the well-known writer Peter Scholl Latour were appointed editors, but the staff occupied the magazine's offices, and Mohn hired someone else. In the early 1990s, a former editor-in-chief at West German Television, who had served as public relations man for Bertelsmann, took over. The magazine is under control. No longer the free spirit it was, Stern causes Bertelsmann less trouble. And that was Rolf Schmidholz, now the head of BMG. I've alluded to Spitfire. That's a tape duplication service which stocks the various tapes that I've produced over the years. Spitfire can be reached by regular mail at Spitfire, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E, one word, P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D, zip code 95005. The email address for Spitfire is mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist1word.com, and you can visit the Real Audio Equipped Spitfire website with a list of and description of the various tapes available from Spitfire at www.spitfirelist1word.com. There's an annotated description of For the Record Program 274 that you're listening to on the Spitfire website. Sister station WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey, is archiving many of the For the Record broadcasts on Real Audio. You can visit their website at wfmu.org/Dave Emory, D-A-V-E-E-M-O-R-Y, and many of the For the Record segments are archived there on Real Audio. That concludes side one of For the Record program number 274. If Music Be the Food of Love, Munch On, an update on German corporate control over American media. This is being recorded on February 4th of the year 2001. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.